morning to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. We have a stunning science prediction that it looks like it's soon to be confirmed. On this program, on Fridays, we air Real Science Radio, and over the decades, we have made science predictions. Many of them have been confirmed, some in startling fashion, when the entire world of secular materialist science is expecting one result. And Fred Williams and I go on the radio on Fridays, Real Science Radio, and we predict a creationist young earth outcome for some major discovery. And bam, there it is. Bam, there it is. Bam, there it is. Over and over and over. And we list these online at kgov.com/predictions. Well, I'd like to share with you another prediction that looks like it is soon to be confirmed. Also, Planned Parenthood is pulling out of the Title X funding program from the federal government. So we want to talk about that and why it has confused a lot of pro-lifers, because Planned Parenthood says we're not going to comply with these new regulations in order to get federal tax dollars, so we're going to pull out. And so many pro-lifers thought that Donald Trump defunded Planned Parenthood years ago. They thought 2.5 years ago there was the money, the tax dollars going to Planned Parenthood ended. I mean, how many times since Trump was inaugurated, it's been, what, 125 weeks or so? Once a week? Let's round it off at 100 times I've heard from people, well, Trump did defund Planned Parenthood, and here we are over $1 billion later given to the child killers, and Planned Parenthood just now is saying they're about to pull out of the Title X federal funds program. So we want to talk about that and how the founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, you know, she didn't do all this alone. And on our website, kgov.com/funding, we have, and it's devastating to see, we have the letterhead, the Planned Parenthood Federation of America letterhead, and a letter sent out January 8th, 1947, and the board of directors across the top starts with Margaret Sanger, then a second, a third, a fourth, and the fifth is President Bush's father. President Bush's father was on the board with Margaret Sanger. He was their national treasurer. And his son, President Bush, George H.W. Bush, introduced Title X funding through which billions of dollars have gone to this child-killing organization. And this grandfather of George W. Bush, his grandson, who was claimed to be the most pro-life president in history by National Right to Life, not only did he stack the courts in Texas with pro-abortion judges and on the Supreme Court with judges who reject that the child has a right to life, but he doubled, George W. Bush doubled the funding going to Planned Parenthood. So we'll talk about what is happening right now that's confused so many pro-lifers because they thought 2.5 years ago that Planned Parenthood was no longer being funded. Now, here we are 2.5 years later, and they're the ones making the move saying we're going to pull ourselves out of this Title X funding. We'll talk about that. Also, is Acosta on suicide watch? Is he? This is Alexander Acosta, you know, Trump's former cabinet member who was the U.S. attorney who gave the sweetheart deal to pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. So now is Acosta on suicide? Oh, he's not? That was just a rumor? Oh, okay, he's not. I repeat, Alexander Acosta is not on suicide watch. He's not. All right, now this is confirmed here. ISIS has struck again. Every day, Muslim terrorists, Islamic extremists murder people. And this attack at a wedding, a Muslim wedding, 63 people murdered, about 128 people injured. So absolutely devastating. And on our website, kgov.com/terror, we have the best definition of terror. And when people Google, what is the best definition of terror? Then this pops up very highly, if not number one, our website. And also, we have the number, it's 35,461 deadly Muslim terrorist attacks since 9/11. 35,461. I'm not misspeaking. That's how many deadly attacks since 9/11. Who hates Muslims the most? Well, when you think about the liberals who refuse to identify Islamic terror, like Barack Obama, when you realize that the primary victims of Islamic extremism are Muslims, anything less than a full effort to identify and defeat Islamic terror is a hatred, including a self-loathing of Muslims. And that would be why. Why would Obama, who has such an affinity toward Islam, why would he be an impediment, a roadblock in the way of identifying and defeating Islamic terror? Why would that be? Well, Barack Obama, like all the world, he is Christ-centered. Right? Christ-centered. Everything is Christ-centered, either looking to Jesus Christ in humility and seeking to honor him and obey him, or rebelling against him. So Barack Obama is motivated, above all else, by his hatred for Jesus Christ and his hatred for Christians. And he identifies the tip of the spear of opposing Islamic extremism with conservative Christians and Jews in the Holy Land. And so his knee-jerk opposition to anyone associated with the Bible, with the scriptures, with Judeo-Christian ethics, morality, history, his knee-jerk reaction against us causes him to not want to be identified with us in such extreme fashion that even if it means hundreds of thousands of Muslims being murdered by Islamic terrorists since 9/11, he refuses to acknowledge this. All right, and now before the prediction, there is this chart that we're going to have to put up on our website with today's show, kgov.com, the Trump effect. It's the Trump effect. And it shows the explosion since 2017 when he took office. But this is the Trump vulgarity effect. This is how many times U.S. lawmakers, federal lawmakers, have cursed. How many times they have used vulgarity since, well, it's got a chart here. 2014, there's hardly a bump. 2015, hardly. 2016, the presidential election, there's a little bit. But you go to 2017, 18, and 19, and it's increased tenfold. Tenfold. The candidate who is supported by the Christian conservatives, that candidate, being filthy and vulgar in his own demeanor, has given a green light to everybody to be filthy, to be despicable. One of the Muslim representatives, the two female Muslim reps who were denied access to Israel, one of them tweeted the most vulgar conceivable thing to put in writing, to verbalize, to put in a text, and that was her speech. So sexually vulgar, despicable, and Donald Trump has green-lighted this because he's filthy mouth. And unlike, say, George W. Bush, who also had a filthy mouth, he did it publicly because he was emboldened. Because like he said, no matter what he does, no matter how bad he is, these Christians are going to support him. Now, why would that be? Because they have a lust to defeat the Democrats. When God says, do not covet, do not lust, you know, lust is not only physical, it's not only for money or power, it's also a lust to defeat the competition, like in sports. All right, so the Trump vulgarity effect, a tenfold increase. And it's really, it truly is shocking to see the nature of the discourse. And how many Christians think that cussing, being vulgar, is okay, being sexually vulgar, as though they would speak like that to the Lord, to their daughters? Yeah, I guess a lot of them would, because they're so filthy mouthed, and because their sin is overbearing, and it's silencing the voice of their conscience and the scriptures. So we have a list of all the forms of sexual immorality that are each being supported by Christians, including shacking up and homosexuality and entertainment that has pornography in it, and like on Netflix, and on and on and on. So the Trump effect, maybe we'll link to this from that list, which I think is at the bottom of our superfluous list, kgov.com/superfluous, our list of Christian leaders going gay. Now there's so many, it's hard to keep a list. That's why we called it our superfluous list. It's superfluous. Okay, our stunning prediction. This is truly stunning. This is absolutely stunning. Over the years, we've pointed out that when evolutionists look at creatures, that let's say they look at animals that have five digits on their limbs, and they say, well, obviously, they have five digits because it's common descent, and they all evolved from an original life form that had five digits, and that's why they have them. And so on. You know, they make that argument in a thousand different ways. And it turns out, virtually every time when you look at the details don't match their prediction. Like, for example, there are species that have five digits, but they form those five digits in completely different ways. Like some will have limbs, and at the end of the limbs, they grow five buds, and those buds increase in size until they become the digits or the fingers. Others have at the end of their limb a pad, and the pad is solid, but then the cells die between the five digits, forming the five fingers. That's two completely different ways to end up with the same concept. So that's an example of when the evidence doesn't actually fit the superficial theory. So what we have said for years on Bob Benyert Live is that when God created, he began with coding libraries, like software libraries, software modules of DNA. And he started with some number of software modules. Now, if you've never programmed, this might be hard to follow, but imagine that in a program you need functions. One function might be when people type on a keyboard, whatever letters they type on the keyboard, it displays that on the screen. So you create a function that for each key that's pressed, if it's a text key instead of like a command key, if it's Control F for find, you don't want the display to show the word find. You want it to bring up another function that will find some text on your screen. Command F, Control F. But if they type Shift F, then that's a capital F, and that displays on the screen. And so all that logic is in a function. It's in a software subroutine. And every time you have a program that enables people to type on a computer or even on your phone or your iPad or whatever, you don't have to want to rewrite that text to do all that. You want to reuse the same code. So coding libraries, so a software architect, software designer will say, all right, here are our standardized libraries of software routines, functions, subroutines, and we're going to use these libraries in order to create our applications. And if you're doing a scientific application versus you're doing a finance application, or you're doing a graphic arts or video, you will select from different libraries, and some applications, you'll use some functions from one library and some functions from another library, and perhaps some from a third even. And so if you understand that, then you look at the code, the computer software, and they actually may embed the entire library into the program, because that might be the easiest and the cheapest way, the most economical way to do it. And so when God designed, here's what Fred Williams and I, Fred is a software engineer. I programmed for a few years back in the 1980s, first for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company. Then I went to the phone company US West as a business systems administrator on information systems. Then I went to Microsoft as a program manager and eventually to PC Week before I ended up on the radio. And during that time, you know, I'm very familiar with this concept of software libraries, and Fred is too, in the extreme. So when we look at the way that God created, it became apparent to us that God was using software libraries, but it wasn't digital code per se. It was genetic code. It was DNA, families of genes. And so the evidence for this, for example, you've heard of the elephant and the elephant shrew, right? Well, have you heard of the zebra finch and the zebra fish? Now, why do you think they would call a fish a zebra fish? Why might they do that? Because it probably has stripes, right? And they also have a zebra finch, which is a bird. Well, if God used software libraries, genetic libraries, from which he pulled subroutines to make a zebra finch and a zebra fish, then you might expect that there would be unique DNA between the zebra finch, which is a bird, and the zebra fish, which is a fish, genetics that are not in any other creatures at all. No other creatures. And sure enough, it's startling. If Darwinism were true, a bird and a fish, even though they had similar patterns on their exteriors, a bird and a fish should not share unique genetics because they would not have a common ancestor who had those unique genetics. But it turns out that a zebra finch and a zebra fish share 19 gene families that are not in any other species. Isn't that unbelievable? That is similar to the elephant shrew, a little rodent digging around in the dirt. An elephant shrew, a few inches long, has a snout that reminds you of an elephant's trunk. It reminds you of it. It's, you know, it tapers and it's long and skinny. And so we call it an elephant shrew. And the geneticist in the journal Science, they were shocked. They were truly shocked when they sequenced the elephant shrew's DNA and they found out that it was closer genetically to an elephant than to other shrews. Now, is that too much? That would mean, if Darwinism were true, that an elephant evolved into a shrew. Or all the shrews evolved from some other rodent ancestor, except for the elephant shrew, which evolved from an elephant. However, it falsifies the whole common descent claim. And of course, you've heard about the bats and the whales, right? Bats and whales have genes. And when you listen to the Discovery Channel or BBC or Nova programs on life and the Earth and all, the blue planet, they don't tell you this stuff. I mean, when they address things like this, they do them as one-off, like, oh, look at this. What a surprise. They don't put together the overwhelming pattern that falsifies their atheistic worldview. So a bat and a whale share unique genetics that are different from any other species that doesn't have echolocation. So it's also in dolphins. But there is no common ancestor to the bat and the whale that had echolocation. So when you look at these examples, they are powerful evidence that the designer, the creator God, and we're talking about Jesus Christ who created all things, that Jesus designed these software libraries or these genetic modules. And from these modules, he chose routines that he would use or functions that he would use to build different animals and different plants. And that's why a sponge is 70% the same as a human being. And that's why horse DNA is closer to bats than to cows. Think about that. Horse DNA is closer to bats than to cows because of the software modules that God chose to design a horse and a bat from. Now, last year, 2018, in a science journal called Biocomplexity, a paper was published on this. I only became aware of this paper yesterday. And the last time that Fred Williams and I discussed this idea was in our Evolution's Big Squeeze series of this summer. What a fun series it was. But I haven't gone back to 2013. Perhaps someone in the audience would do that for me, to listen to our list of genomes that just don't fit. When we did that show 6 years ago, if memory serves, we proposed this hypothesis that God was using software libraries, genetic modules, and choosing from them different functions to make creatures. And from that concept, then, when you have that idea, you can test the data. You could look at different species and say, well, does Darwin's tree of life and the genes we find in elephant shrews and elephants and in zebra fish and zebra finches and in bats and whales, does the genetic evidence support Darwin's conception of common ancestry, common descent in the tree of life, or does it support the use of genetic libraries from which to design creatures? And I think as the data is rolling in, I think, first of all, if you do go back and listen to our list of genomes that just don't fit and you find that we shared that concept on that program, please email me, bob@kgov.com, bob@kgov.com. And I would say one or two more examples like this, where the shared genetics are extraordinary and they cannot be explained by common descent, but they can be explained by starting with programming libraries of DNA. I think two or three more examples and we'll be able to call this prediction confirmed. So if you could help with that, that would be awesome. I believe we first discussed this long before 2013, but it's somewhat of a challenge to go back and figure it out. Okay, so Planned Parenthood. The Trump administration has just changed the rules. So they said, if you want money from Title X funding, which there's different ways Planned Parenthood gets money from the federal government. That's been the main way. If you want money from Title X funding, now there are new rules, beginning with this, that you're a medical provider, you cannot tell a patient where they can get an abortion. You could tell them that they should have an abortion, but you can't tell them where they can get the abortion. So that's one of the first rules. Now, we know that the way countless service providers respond to countless regulations, when they can't do something, they give a wink and a nod, and they say, well, I can't tell you where to get an abortion, but of course, you could Google it if you wanted to. And people do know that they could find abortion mills pretty easily. But anyway, that rule would mean that Planned Parenthood clinics and their referral clinics, which are going away because of Google, They don't need referral clinics anymore because students all have phones and they know how to find where to get an abortion. But that would mean that Planned Parenthood can't tell people that, hey, go to our clinic and get an abortion. But more significantly, this rule now says that you have to financially separate your medical facility from a facility that provides abortion. They have to actually be separated physically, financially. They can't be in the same facility. They can't share the same finances. So for decades now, every Republican president would reinstitute the Hyde Amendment, which says that you can't use federal tax funds for abortion. And then they would proceed to give Planned Parenthood hundreds of millions of dollars, typically with no fight whatsoever. And George W. Bush doubled the funding that went to Planned Parenthood from what Bill Clinton gave them, from $1 billion to $2 billion. And Donald Trump has been funding Planned Parenthood at Barack Obama levels. So this is significant, though. This is a change. This is a change. But the tragedy is, if you're going to defeat ISIS, you're not going to regulate ISIS and tell them, make sure you give painkillers or don't kill kids who are within 5 months of birth or whatever. You're not going to do that. You're going to try to defeat them and not confuse the matter. And if you're going to defund ISIS, step one is don't give them $1 billion if your goal is to defund them. So every Republican administration for decades has said that they want to defund Planned Parenthood, and everyone gives them billions of dollars. And so right now we're in this new territory where the Trump administration has passed this new law. Now, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, it's somewhat shocking that the Ninth Circuit in San Francisco, which is so hostile to any Christian morality, they're the ones that lifted this nationwide injunction that had prevented the Trump administration from enforcing the new rule. And eventually, they will give a permanent ruling on whether or not the government can do this, enforce this law, in their opinion. So it's peculiar that a positive ruling came out of the Ninth Circuit. And often, we call this the Enyart Court syndrome decades ago. When you see the early decision of a judge, beware, their final will be the opposite. God bless you guys.